you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. President Obama today nominated Fed Vice Chair Janet Yellen to replace outgoing Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke when he steps down at the end of January of 2014. In a brief speech at the White House, Yellen said she is committed to Bernanke's vision of what the Fed should do, which is to keep inflation low and maximize employment.
If confirmed by the Senate, I pledge to do my utmost to promote maximum employment, stable prices, and a strong and stable financial system.
Already, key Democrats have announced their support for Yellen. Democrat Jack Reed from Rhode Island said that Yellen is supremely qualified, a strong voice for fighting unemployment, and deserves bipartisan support. And Chuck Schumer said that Yellen is an excellent choice, and he thinks that she'll be confirmed by a wide margin. If confirmed, Yellen would become the first Democrat to lead the Federal Reserve in 25 years. And of course, if confirmed, she'll be the first woman ever to lead the agency. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Glad you could make it. This is Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Duke Brooks here. Thanks very much for being along for this Wednesday, October 9th edition of RFA, where the number, as always, is 718-305-7176. I don't know anything about Janet Yellen. It seems I remember it, and Jeff just mentioned her a moment ago, of course, in our top of the hour newscast from Talk Radio News Service in Washington. But it seems I remember reading somewhere that she is worth $900 billion. You know, she's the heir to some giant fortune or something. She just has absolutely a ton of money, and I think she was involved in some kind of a scandal. I mean, if you know more about it than I do, and I'm fairly sure that almost everyone does. 718-305-7176. This is from CNBC via the Drudge Report. Let me see if I can find something about she was widely expected to be nominated. President Obama will make the announcement, which he did today at 3 p.m. If confirmed, she'll have a tough job ahead of her. She will have to oversee the tricky process of reversing the extraordinary stimulus the U.S. Central Bank put in place to shore up the world's largest economy, which eclipses Japan and China put together. Well, you know, I'm very, very happy that we are still the largest economy in the world. And I don't know how much longer we will remain that way as long as we have this kind of busybody government in Washington, D.C. that feels that they have either the right or the obligation or duty to micromanage every single aspect of the economy. That's what's really dragging things down. Regulation has gone up dramatically since Obama and his friends took office. We know that they believe that it is government's job to run everything. They often speak about government having the right to do this or the right to do that. Let's be honest here. Government does not have any rights. Excuse me. Government has obligations, duties, authorities, powers, but it doesn't have any rights. In America, the people have rights. I have noticed, though, that over the last probably 10, excuse me, or 15 years, there is a trend amongst government employees at every level, elected federal legislators, elected state, appointed state, bureaucrats, to describe their actions as being rights, and the conduct of the voting taxpaying citizens as being privileges. And this is wrong. The citizens in this country have rights. Government has only authorities, duties, obligations, powers, and responsibilities, but it does not have rights. And there is a big difference between those things. The so-called shutdown, and I say so-called because it really is not a shutdown, 17% of the federal government's activities is not funded right now, but it's not going to save any money, because what is going to happen is those bureaucrats in Washington and at other places all over the country, when they finally, and I have a feeling it's going to be about a week right now, around the 9th or 6th week, that they will get this together somehow, and I hope they're able to do it without caving in to the left, and without either delaying or funding Obamacare. I don't want it to be delayed. I don't want the so-called individual mandate to be delayed. The reason is that I don't want, I want people to have to actually deal with it, and I want them to see how bad it is, so that this time next year they will be ready to throw their representatives out of office. Obviously, the entire U.S. House of Representatives is up for re-election every 2 years. That's not bad. A third of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years. Senators have 6-year terms. And I just want the American people to think, look, you know, whoever you are, Congressman so-and-so, Senator blah, 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 you have been in Washington for 30 years, 40 years, 21 years, 18 years, whatever it is, and you helped to cause this problem. I don't want you there anymore. Whoever they are, throw them out. It's that simple. If you agree or disagree, that's fine. 718-305-7176 is the number. Let me mention to you what we're going to be doing on the show tonight. First hour, in fact, coming up in a little less than 10 minutes, I will be joined by phone from Hollywood by Dan Richter. Dan Richter played a role in the Stanley Kubrick film 2001, A Space Odyssey, which in my view is the greatest film ever. I absolutely love that. I mean, if you have not seen it, you should see it. I don't care how old or how young you are. It is just a tremendous, absolutely breathtaking, spectacular film. Excuse me. And it spans about a 5-million-year period of time, starting at the moment that proto-humans, hominids, as it were, Australopithecus afarensis, I believe, is the scientific name for the pre-human ape-like animals that were depicted in the beginning of the film. From that moment that they first began to use tools, up until the year 2002. And one of the lead ape, the lead ape man ape or hominid, excuse me, was played by Dan Richter, who is going to be my guest here on Radio Free America in just a few minutes. We're going to be talking about Dan's new book, The Dream Is Over, and Dan lived with John Lennon and Yoko Ono in London after he starred in the first segment of 2001 A Space Odyssey. So we'll be talking about the film a little bit. We'll be talking about his new book. We'll be talking about his relationship with John and Yoko. And we'll be talking about Stanley Kubrick, who obviously Dan knew personally, and who I believe is the greatest film director of all time. And my interview with him will start in about, 5 to 7 minutes from now. So stay right where you are. In the second hour, my friend Victoria Bingham will be joining us from suburban North Virginia. Excuse me, Victoria was an intelligence specialist in the U.S. Army, and she now owns a small business, but she pays a lot of attention to information and terrorism and counterterrorism strategies on behalf of the U.S., well, not on behalf of the U.S. government, but vis-a-vis the U.S. government. She has some very interesting thoughts about the so-called shutdown and that sort of thing. So always very interesting to speak with Victoria, very articulate person. And we will also be joined towards the end of the second hour by my friend Brad Bierman, because the Major League Pennant Series, they are upon us, and the World Series will be taking place at some point fairly soon. And Brad has been a very, very serious baseball fan his entire life. He's a real serious sports guy, and I'm interested in baseball. You know, I'm not like, they don't exactly call me Mr. Baseball, but it's, you know, it's an extremely interesting, very, very interesting subject, especially at this time of year. Now, today is Wednesday, but, you know, we at conservativenationmedia.com start off the work week every Monday in a very big way. The show is called Inside Tennessee with my friend Dave Vance. Now, even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. It's brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. That's Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. We are about 13 minutes after the hour now. 718-305-7176 is the number here, as it always is. We had someone that popped up in the call-in queue a moment ago. Not really sure who that was, but in any event, we will be going to a break in a moment or two, and then after that, Dan Richter will be with us. If you haven't seen it, it's available on DVD. It actually shows up on cable, Showtime or HBO or something like that every once in a while. It is still a completely compelling movie. I can barely not watch the film when it comes on. I know what you're thinking. Yeah, go ahead and choke to death, you smoker. I understand. You know. Hey, I went to the cardiologist the other day. He said, the bad news is you're going to be dead in a week. I said, well, good grief, doc. What's the good news? And he said, did you see that gorgeous blonde nurse in the outer office? I'm going out with her. But actually, no. He gave me a very, very good bill of health. I just do need to quit smoking. I mean, every time I hang anything like that, Linda is just like, I don't blame her. She's right. I do need to quit. No question about it. She's, you know, saying things behind me right now as we speak. What was that, hon? Yeah, that's right. Anyway, 2001, the star, Dan Richter. Maybe one day I can get Keir DeLay or Gary Lockwood. I can't get William Sylvester, sadly. He is no longer with us. But in any event, stay right where you are. Dan Richter will be joining us shortly. This is Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Don't go away.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
You know, it's okay to rock and roll and party. Just let someone else do the driving. Hi, this is Ray Manzarek of The Doors for RAD. Please don't drink and drive, and don't drive with someone else who's been drinking.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Red on blue, red on blue.
Adopting a new pet is a rewarding experience. And Shelter Pets make super pets. Your new best friend will steal your heart, bring you happiness, and enrich your life for years to come. You can make a difference in the life of an animal. Adopt and bring home a Shelter Pet today. To find out more, visit theshelterpetproject.org. This message has been brought to you by the Humane Society of the United States, Maddie's Fund, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. That, of course, was also Sperig Zarathustra by Strauss. The iconic theme music to 2001 A Space Odyssey. We expect to hear from Dan Richter, one of the stars of the film, any moment now. And what a tremendous, just a wonderful film that was. It's one of the films that I think is probably never going to go away. I'm certain that, 50 years from now, people are still going to be watching that film and studying it. And rightfully so, because it is so powerful and it asks questions that, every once in a while people will say, what exactly does this mean? What does that mean? Why did this happen? That sort of thing. But I'm not really sure that people were intended to know all the answers to those questions. I don't think that they were. Kubrick was in his 30s when he made the film, which I find to be amazing. Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote the book along with Kubrick, and Kubrick wrote the screenplay along with Clark. It was a joint effort. I think Clark once mentioned that Stanley Kubrick was the most intelligent person that he had ever met, and that does not surprise me. To make a movie like that, there are special effects, and nowadays special effects in movies are largely generated using computers and that sort of thing. They didn't have any of those in 1965 and 66 when they were shooting that film. They did not have them. And I think 2001 represents the highest achievement level in camera special effects, mechanical special effects. That's, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. After that, everything was by computer. The next, there was another space movie that came out several years after 2001. That one was called Silent Running. It really was not that much of a film. I think the director of that film had been the special effects director of 2001, Douglas Trumbull, I think. Not positive, you know. But in any event, that was I thought it was kind of a silly movie. Great models in the movie, miniatures, great. But it just was not really all that great of a film. And the next big space film that came out 9 years after 2001 did, that was Star Wars. And that was largely, there was a lot of computer usage in Star Wars. The personal computer did not yet exist, but the they did use computers quite a bit. I read somewhere there was an interview where it might have been Trumbull. You know, I'm not really sure who it was. I've got Dan Richter on the phone now. Dan? Yes, the number is 718-305-7176. We're on the air. We're waiting to talk to you. No, you call that number. Thanks very much. Bye. All right, outstanding. Dan will be with us in just a moment. He's going to call in right now. Anyway, we will be joined by him in a moment and talk a little bit about 2001. When I spoke to him on the phone the other night, I told him I was completely starstruck, and frankly, I am. You know, this is one of the people that was in what I think is the greatest film that was ever made. And I'm very, very glad that he and I will be talking in a moment. And here, in fact, is Dan Richter. Dan, welcome to Radio Free America. Thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Hi.
Hi. So you're out in California now, but in the mid-1960s, you were living in London. And how did you get the gig to be the and I'm presuming that the kind of hominid that that was portrayed, we would refer to today as Australopithecus afarensis. Is that about right, or do we know?
Well,
or?
Actually, afarensis hadn't been discovered yet. It was an earlier iteration called Australopithecus africanus.
Ah, okay. All right. And that proto-human lived about 4 to 5 million years ago. Is that about right?
Yeah, may have been even as close as 3 million, but very, very long ago.
Now, how did you get that gig?
Well, you know, I was teaching a mime in London, and a fellow who I had produced some stuff with was friends with a friend of Arthur Clarke, and Arthur and Stanley Kubrick, had not yet shot the opening of the movie. They had tried to do it, but they hadn't been successful. They had used dancers, stuntmen, and all kinds of different people. And they said one day, they said, "Why don't we talk to a mime?" Which, because they had never talked to a mime, and the word got to me through the chain of friends, and they said, "Would I come out and would I let Stanley pick my brain?" So I went out there and I told him how I would do it, and he pretty much hired me on the spot.
Now you had about 16 to 20 people working for you, but they were mostly dancers, right?
That's right, Duke. What happened was, it took me about 4 or 5 months to develop the movement. And once I had it developed, I then had to cast the people, and there just weren't that many mimes around. There's not a lot of mimes and not a lot of highly trained mimes. There are a lot of street mimes, but highly trained mimes who have the physical abilities to do that just aren't a lot. So I had to compromise and hire dancers and basically untrain them from their dance and sort of retrain them in the movement I had developed.
Now, the technique that was used to photograph those initial scenes, and this was brand new at the time, called front projection. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It basically, what it is there's a screen behind you that is made out of thousands or millions of little bubbles that are mirrors. And the projection is in front of you and projects right through you, and the screen throws it right back at the camera, as long as the camera is directly at directly pointed right at the screen. And you cover your own shadow, so it works. It's sort of magical, but it works.
And the photographing camera and the projector, of course, have to be coupled. They have to be linked up so that the gate in the camera is going to be open at exactly the same moment that the or it's not a film projector. The front projector is not a film projector, correct?
Yeah, it's just we used 8x10 transparencies, and basically the transparency projector is sitting 90 degree angles to the camera, and it goes through a one-way mirror that's at a 45 degree angle. So basically the focal planes of both line up. You know, the absolute centers of each lens line up perfectly, and presto chango, it works.
Only Kubrick. Now, when was that sequence? If I remember, principal photography on the film began in January of 1965 in England, and
yes,
that was the scene where the astronauts are at the scene of the monolith on the moon, and they have dug it up. When were your sequences shot, and how long did it take for you to do your work?
We shot it, I guess it was June, July of 67. And it took us, I think in all, it was about 8 weeks shooting.
Okay, all right. And, the other thing is that 2001, of course, came out in 1968.
Yeah.
I saw it in April when it opened in New York City. I was probably there, lived in Philadelphia. They got on the train. You know, my parents sent me up to my friend's house, and we saw the film. And I think that Robert and I, you know, being a couple of 12-year-old kids, stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning talking about it, you know. But
sure.
There's one sequence, it seemed to me that the Australopithecus, those hominids, were living a very, very tough and tenuous existence. They were subject to a leopard attack. Was that you that was attacked by the leopard?
No, that was a stunt guy named Terry Duggan who had, we had a leopard, a lion, a zebra, a giraffe. We had all kinds of animals down at the Southampton Zoo for about a year before. And I would go down and work with Terry, and he would go in and wrestle with the lion and the leopard every day because Stanley hadn't decided what he wanted to use. And so the leopard was used to wrestling with Terry. And so we put Terry in a suit and put him there, and then we put me behind him and then the guys behind me sort of as actually the first time we tried to do the take, the leopard looked around and – because I wasn't familiar. He started going for me, and Terry ran, tackled him just before he got to me, which was a little disconcerting, I must say.
Yes, I would imagine. All right, Dan, can you stand by? We're going to take a quick commercial break here, and if you can stay with me, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, okay. All righty. It is just about at the bottom of the hour. And can't wait to get back to Rick. A fascinating person and a fascinating let me see here. Okay. Now then, I'm going to presume that since you are listening to me tonight on conservativemedia.com that you are a conservative, and that means that you love America, just like we do, and you probably don't want to get caught short in case the government in D.C. comes along and leaves the country, and maybe even your family, unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Now, you're going to want everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family and your pipeline. Those essentials is right there at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That's going to take you to the world's best known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. More with Dan Richter and more Radio Free America coming up, so don't go away.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You've got to try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a... goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here. I'm joined again by Mr. Dan Richter, the star of the film 2001: A Space Odyssey. We've been talking about the movie. Dan, I once read that Arthur C. Clarke had made a comment that he thought the reason that 2001 had not been nominated in the category of best costuming was because the members of the Academy might not have realized that they were actors like you in costumes. And I guess that's a tribute to the believability of the initial sequence of the film. The costumes themselves, what can you tell us about that? And for instance, the eyes in the costume, there's that famous scene, the night before the monolith appears, and I'm presuming that that is you as Moonwatcher, and the eyes are just darting back and forth in fear. Is that the way that worked? Or
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, well, you know, one of the things, believability is at the key of what we were trying to do, Duke. I mean, one of the, that first conversation I had with Stanley when he, where he decided to ask me to come work with him, was my approach to it was we have to make these guys believable. And that's, we have to treat it like an acting problem, the same way a good actor makes you believe what's going on. And once you start believing, once an audience believes, they give up this willing suspension of disbelief and they go with it. And they start, and the whole thing becomes magical. And so one of the things that I did from the very beginning is I had them strip the costumes down so that we could see, we had to be able to see the our eyes, and our hands had to be expressive, and our bodies had to be able to be expressive. And the eyes were a critical part of that. So the mask actually had very large eye holes, and they were just latex around the edges that was then glued to the around the eyes. So you saw the complete eye, and so you could be able to get the expressions and the feelings from it.
How long did it take you to be completely ready in costume each day before shooting began?
You know, it went surprisingly quickly because the costume was a single piece. I first had to put on some padding on the shoulders and the small of the back, which was in netting, and I just stepped into that. And then I stepped into the costume, and then the hands and the feet were put on just like you'd put on, you know, gloves and galoshes, and they were all attached by Velcro. And then the mask could be taken on and off. They blackened around my eyes so that when the mask went on, it would look all right. And it was surprisingly quickly. It took, of course, months to develop the costume, but once we had
sure.
it was easy to do. Yeah.
Now, the noises, the speech, the calls of the ape, the proto-humans, was that you, or how was that done?
Yeah, that was us. You have to remember we shot without sound, and we weren't recording any sound. And I was encouraging, from the very beginning when I began training my people, I encouraged them to make the chimpanzee pant hoots, basically, and to sound like a tribe of chimpanzees. We had footage of Jane Goodall's chimpanzees that we got from National Geographic, and we made sounds all the time, and I encouraged them on the set while we were shooting to make the sounds as well, because it helped them with their performance. And it didn't matter to Stanley because we weren't recording sound, and he liked the sounds anyway. And after we had finished shooting everything, we took the guys who were the best hooters or sound makers, and we checked the airline schedules. We found a place that there were no overhead airplanes in a field way out north of the studio. And we spent an afternoon with a Nagra tape recorder just recording sounds, which Stanley then, of course, cut together to make the soundtrack.
Is that the same location where you famously hurled that bone up into the air for what I think is the greatest jump cut in the history of film?
Yeah, well, no, actually, we did that right on the lot. Actually, we were probably 100 yards from buses and trucks going by and people walking by on the street just outside the fence of the lot, because Stanley wanted to get clouds. He wanted to see the sky, which we couldn't because everything else had been shot inside. So that shot outdoors where I threw the bone is really shot from below me, so you don't see anything that's around me. You just see the sky above, and so we were able to do it right there at the studio.
You know, I've seen the film. This is one of the only things I think I haven't seen with Tom Hanks. Hanks once said that he had seen 2001 A Space Odyssey over 100 times, and then he said projected, as distinct from watching it on DVD, and I believe I have as well. One of the things that really struck me about your interpretation of the leader of that tribe, who has the name of Moonwatcher, is how absolutely elated he was when he first realized that he could use that bone as a weapon. And, you know, twice when he first picks it up and he's kind of twisting it back and forth, and then he finds the skull of that tapir animal and he crushes it. And then again, when he kills his rival at the water pond. How on earth were you able to bring that across? I mean, it's so obvious that this guy is just, he's never been happier about anything in his proto-human life. How do you do that? How do you bring that out?
Well, you know, it was, I developed it. I started the actual, we weren't sure how to play that, and Stanley wasn't giving me a lot of direction. Stanley never gave his actors a great deal of direction. He always, and that's one of the reasons he took so many takes, is he liked to develop a scene by shooting it. And so we'd shoot over and over, and he'll say something like, you know, I really like that, Dan. Why don't we keep that? Why don't you do a little more of that? And when I had first started approaching the skull in one of the early takes, I had picked up the bone, and I didn't know how to hold a bone. I'd never held a bone before, and I was playing with it. And one of the rib bones that was there flew up in the air, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, Stanley, because we could talk to each other because we weren't recording sound and I had a mask on. He said, no, it's great, great, continue, keep doing it. So I did it, and they said, do it some more. And then we started piling the bones so that I could hit them, and they'd spin in the air. And he picked up that one thing, and we kept expanding the idea of being large and throwing and lady. And of course, the character, he's liberated. He's been going around on all fours, scrubbing around, eating roots, and fighting for food with tapes, and suddenly he's standing up. If you may notice that we're sort of all crouched down at the beginning, and that once we pick up the bones and start, smashing skulls, we start to stand. And we have, we have this new power, and it's just, everybody's excited about it. And also, we're animals. We move, and we're full of energy.
It was an amazing sequence, and everything about the film, it is in a class by itself. Now, in addition to being one of the stars of the greatest film of all time, in my opinion, you had a couple of very, very widely and well-known movies when you were in London, isn't that right?
Yeah, say that again, Duke. I had a little interference on the phone.
I'm sorry. You lived with John Lennon and Yoko Ono, correct?
Oh, yes, I did. I lived with them for 4 years after the film was finished. Yoko was an old friend of mine, and we had apartments side by side in London. And when John came around and they fell in love, et cetera, they asked me to come live with them and help them make films and record records and whatnot. And it was an amazing time. I ended up living with them. Years and helping produce their films and their records, and I did four of their record covers, and that became a whole new thing for me to play with and have fun.
So you must have met Paul and George as well.
Yeah, I knew all the guys.
Oh, that's just unbelievable. Now you have a new book that is out. Tell me a little bit about that. Is it a history of what your life was like in London back then? I mean, that was quite a long time ago.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it talks about what it was like in London in the 60s, all the good and all the bad. It's a very honest portrayal. It basically focuses on the years where I lived with John and Yoko and what happened. And it's really the real insider's tale, a story of John and Yoko, and I hope I've portrayed them as real people, not as these just idealized stars. And it also I write about recording Imagine, and all of the things that they were up to during those 4 years from 1969 to 1973. And it is called The Dream Is Over, and you can get it on Amazon. And I'm very proud of it. I think people tell me it's a good read, and I've sort of caught the spirit of the times, and I hope I've portray John as a real person. He was a friend, and he wasn't just a rock and roll star. He was this wonderful man that was a dear friend of mine.
You must have been heartbroken on that day, on December 7th, 1980, and of course, I never met any of the Beatles, although I'm a huge fan, still am, always will be. But that was, it's one of those moments where I remember exactly where I was and exactly how I found out that night that he had been shot and killed outside the Dakota Building in New York City. Where were you, and how did you find out about it?
Well, I was in New York, and I was in a hotel room at the Chelsea Hotel, watching the television, and I saw it, and I was of course stunned. I immediately picked up the phone and tried to get spoke, and I couldn't. So I sent her a telegram, just saying, anything I can do, we're just heartbroken, et cetera. And it was, I just tore my heart out, Duke. I mean, because he was a major star and things like that. But this was a friend of mine, a guy who I'd been through so much with. And I still miss him terribly.
Yes. Well, anyone that, I miss George Harrison. He passed away, obviously, quite a few years, several years ago. But I just, I never in my life thought the Beatles would no longer be with us. And, sadly, it's one of those things that nobody gets out of here alive, Dan. Nobody does. Can I ask you to stand by for
that? I'm 74, and I'm very aware of that.
Good. I had no... in your photos, I see your handsome face there. You sure don't look it. Can I ask you, I know you have a screening to go to tonight in Hollywood. Can I ask you to stand by about 2 minutes, and then I'll come right back to you?
Absolutely, Duke. No problem.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. More with Dan Richter coming up. Don't go away.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes, so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what Living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
It feels like you're frozen. Petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments. The bills begin to pile up. Not knowing what to do, you do nothing at all. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because if you take action, if you do something about your mortgage problems, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about the options that are right for you. Real help, real answers, right now. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov and do something about your mortgage problems. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
The Duke Books on conservativenationradio.org.
Ah, thank you, Greg Duran. This is Radio Free American. I'm joined once again by Dan Richter, the star of the Stanley Kubrick epic science fiction, 2001 A Space Odyssey. Dan, very few people, well, I think very few people that I know anyway, remember an artist from that era named Mike Dabo. Do you remember him and that great song he did in the 70s called Rachel's Place?
Yes, I do.
Did you know Michael?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember. I may have run into him, but I don't have any specific memory of it.
Okay. His wife, then wife, Maggie, had the first spoken line in the film 2001, operating the elevator on the space station.
That's right.
Said,
absolutely.
Yeah. She said to William Sylvester, "Here you are, sir. Main level, please." And
yep,
that was Maggie Dabo. You know, that film is an intersection of so
I knew her name was Maggie. I never met her. I knew her name was Maggie, but
yeah,
I did not know that she was Dabo's wife.
Yeah. Now, you're about here, right? Are you still climbing?
Oh yeah, not as much as I'm not as vital as I was 20 years ago, but I teach rock climbing. I teach a rock climbing course a couple times a year for Sierra Club here. We have a big climbing community here in Los Angeles, and I take young people out and teach them how to climb.
That sounds wonderful. I'm so happy that you are still that active and that you are contributing to future generations of people, and who knows what they will accomplish using the skills that you've taught them. You know, when somebody teaches, they kind of live forever. You know,
I've been teaching all my life, Duke, and I love it. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. I know that you have a screening to go to tonight, and I don't want to make you late, but it has been a tremendous honor and a great pleasure to speak with you, and I hope that we can do it again.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure, too, Duke. Thank you, and take care.
Thank you, my friend. Have a wonderful night. And, Dan Richter, I am just so starstruck to be able to speak with him, the star of the film 2001, A Space Odyssey. It's almost like having a connection to Stanley Kubrick in a way. I did speak on one occasion in early 2008 with a lady who is the daughter of the famous illustrator who has since passed away named Robert McCall. Robert McCall did the paintings for the posters for 2001, A Space Odyssey. And Mr. McCall's daughter told me that when the film premiered, which was actually before it broke into New York, and Kubrick edited 18 minutes out of the film between the Washington premiere and the New York premiere. Those 18 minutes I would describe as kind of being the holy grail of modern cinema. You know, it was only seen by a few hundred people and never seen again in the film. That someone said that they have found some of the 18 minutes. I'm not sure where, but there. Dan told me on the phone the other night, Dan Richter, that there is a new book coming out at some point soon about the making of 2001. Very, very detailed. There are several books about it. But those 18 minutes, something I'm sure that film buffs like me waiting to see those 18 minutes. I know for a fact that I am. Just about 5.5 minutes now until the top of the hour. The number here at Radio Free America is 718-305-7176. And, you know, the lines are open as you. Happy to speak with you about anything. We've got a few people in the chat room, and I'm just still very, very starstruck at having spoken with Dan Richter. Robert McCall's daughter told me that at the dinner, the premiere, she sat at the same table with Keir Dulai and his wife, and it must have been an absolutely wonderful experience to have been involved in the production of that film. Absolutely amazing. Best film ever made. Second best film ever made? I am beginning to believe that it is P.T. Anderson's film from 2007 called There Will Be Blood, starring Daniel Day-Lewis. I saw Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln last year, Spielberg's film, when it came out, and it's been on cable a couple of times since then. As a matter of fact, I watched parts of it last night, and Daniel Day-Lewis, in my view, is the greatest actor of the modern era, probably since Laurence Olivier passed away. And Olivier worked for Stanley Kubrick in the Stanley Kubrick film Spartacus, which was with Dalton Trumbo. And Dalton Trumbo was a communist. Now, I know what you're thinking. A lot of people say, oh, Duke, you call anybody you don't like a communist. Yeah, that's true, because I think being a communist is about the lowest thing that there is in the entire human race. I'm an anti-communist, always have been, but Dalton Trumbo wrote, and I interviewed him once in late 93 or early 94. He had written a book. I knew the guy was a real commie. You know, he's a red. I mean, let's face it. The guy is a commie. And I knew he was. He wrote the screenplay for that Steve McQueen, Dustin Hoffman film from 1970 called Papillon about Devil's Island. And, he had, you could tell he had a very left-wing view of things in that screenplay, but I interviewed him, and he had written a book about abortion. It was a novel. It was about, I think I read about two-thirds of it or something. It was a novel about a woman that needed an abortion, and everybody in her town was conspiring to prevent her from having one, et cetera, et cetera. And I spoke to this guy. I was polite to him. And at the beginning, towards the beginning of the interview, I said to him, now, your novel takes place in the South. And he cut me off, and he said, readers put it in the South. Never in the book do I say that this takes place in a place like Mississippi or Alabama. Readers all think that it does. And at that point, I said to him, but Mr. Trumbo, at the beginning of the book, where there was a scene at the beginning, it was a trial, and you wrote that the construction on the courthouse was stopped during the Civil War, and that is certainly something that never would have happened during the Civil War in one of the Union states, sir. Isn't that right? And at that point, the guy kind of clammed up on me. And he, after that, he was giving like one-word answers, two-word answers. You know, there is a subtlety to the way the left indoctrinates people. And it does so in a very subtle and extremely nuanced way. The fact of the matter is they are experts at it. The left lives in the world of emotion. And in most human beings, the emotional faculties of the mind are more highly developed than and are dominant over the logical and reasoning faculties of the mind. Let's face it, emotions come to you immediately. It's very, very easy to think in emotional terms. It is very, very difficult to think in logical and reasoning terms. That is hard. It is hard to divorce yourself from your emotions. But that's why the left has the appeal that they do, and that's why they're ruining this entire country, in my view. All right, we're going to take our top of the hour break. Victoria Bingham, Brad Bierman coming up. Stay right where you are.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, and thank you for your service.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Media.com. This is Radio Free America. Duke Brooks here. Top of the second hour on this Wednesday, 9th edition, 2013. You know, the music of the Spheres, the Blue Danube, from 2001. And I remember looking back now, 2001, the year, was a long time ago. 12 years, and I remember in 2001 thinking to myself, what is happening? Why can't I take a vacation on the moon this weekend? Why can't I go to the space station on Pan Am? Where's my pressurized jet pack? Where is the basketball-sized nuclear reactor that was supposed to be in my garage that would provide me and everybody else free, unlimited electricity, for a dollar a month maintenance fee, that sort of thing. Well, those things, the only thing that did happen is everybody has their own computer, right? 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by my friend Victoria Bingham, who I've known since college, and little film stories surrounding Victoria. In 1979, I think I was taking graduate classes in 1979 at Syracuse University, and Victoria and I went to see Apocalypse Now, which I had seen for the first time that summer, a day or two after it broke into New York. Dick Kinsley and I went together to see it. Dick was my best friend in college, and he's just now in the act of retiring, as a senior captain with Continental, which I think is now United or something. I don't pay any attention to the airline industry. Dick once told me he didn't either. He said he comes, he does his job, and, you know, he flies and he goes home. And that's pretty much, that was his deal. But Dick and I went to see this film, Apocalypse Now. And there was a line around the block. It was unbelievable. And there was a guy out there that was hawking cookies. He was just, you know, just walking up and down the line. And it was, I'll never forget that the guy said, ABC, Apocalypse, Brando, and cookies. Because Marlon Brando was one of the two stars, along with Martin Sheen, of Apocalypse Now. That film, you know, a lot of people, I think, artists, critics, people like that, many of them will have a tendency to look down their nose a little bit at film as an art form. Film is as much an art form as painting is or sculpture. There are things about film that are not as difficult as painting the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, like Michael, or Mona Lisa by Leonardo, or the Syndics of the Drapers Guild by Rembrandt. Have you seen that painting? Has anybody, if you have ever seen the Syndics of the Drapers Guild by Rembrandt van Rijn, Rembrandt was his first name, it hangs now in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. I can guarantee you, you have seen it. You have not seen it in real life, perhaps. I've seen it in real life, but you have seen it. This is a group portrait of six men, and they held positions in Holland, in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, in the 16th century of a trade guild. And I suppose syndics means the leaders or the board of directors or something of that nature. I don't know. And I believe this is the greatest group portrait that has ever been done by anybody. The Dutch, certainly Rembrandt, Van Gogh, they knew how to paint. Vermeer, they absolutely did. There's no question about it. I ought to try to get Jim Murphy, my friend Jim Murphy from SteadyRain.com in St. Louis, on the line. I should have thought about this. Jim was an art historian. Now he's an internet consultant and a great guy. But in any event, the Syndics of the Drapers, here I am, I'm 19, all right, 19 years old. It's the summer of 75, and I'm going all through Europe. I've got my Eurail pass, I've got my American Express card, and I am having a blast. Let me tell you, I am having a blast. And I'm in Amsterdam, and a lot of people said to me, you should go see the Rijksmuseum. And I thought, I'm not really an art person, but I went to the Rijksmuseum anyway. And I walked down a gallery, and here is another famous Rembrandt painting that is widely known as the Night Watch, but which properly is called The Return of Captain Van Cock and His Regiment to Amsterdam or something. It's got a very, very long title. Quite a few by Vermeer and Rembrandt and Vincent van Gogh, which is how the Dutch pronounce it. We say Van Gogh, but they say Van Gogh. And here is another large gallery that comes off to the left, and I turned and looked down this gallery, and facing me from 30 yards away, larger than life, is the painting called The Syndics of the Drapers Guild. It's larger than life. And these guys in the painting that Rembrandt did 420 years earlier, they are alive. You can look at these guys and you can tell what their personalities were like. It is stunning. And it was almost a religious experience for me to see this painting. I looked at this painting, And I couldn't move for like 15 minutes. In fact, a guard came up to me. He said something in Nederlandish, in Dutch, and I said, "I'm sorry, sir, I only speak English and French." And he said in perfect English, although accented, "Are you all right, sir?" I said, "I'm fine. I have just never seen anything like that painting." He said, "Yes, it is quite something, isn't it?" We know that painting as the cover of the Dutch Master's cigar box. It is a stunner. If you ever, ever get to Amsterdam and you go to the Rijksmuseum to see the painting, The Syndics of the Drapers Guild, I can guarantee you, you will not be disappointed. Amsterdam's wonderful. You know, Holland is a great country. I mean, it's a very, very small country. And by small country, I mean it is a country whose actual existence could be militarily called into question. All right? Israel is a small country. The United States of America is not a small country. From within, not from without. But that's just me. We're going to be talking about that in a couple of minutes because Victoria Bingham is going to be joining us. Anyway, about 11 minutes after the top of the second hour on this edition of Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. The number is 718-305-7176. Got some folks motoring around in there in the chat room. Always nice to see. I don't know how much attention you have been paying to the so-called shutdown of the government. And frankly, I think the whole thing is just a big bunch of phony baloney. You know, it always has been. Now, if, like me, you love conservative internet radio, and I certainly do, that's why I'm here, then you probably already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows and Josh Bernstein have been carrying the conservative message on the net for years, and now they're here with us on conservativenationmedia.com. So join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news, and conservative analysis with a good dose of plain old-fashioned fun thrown in for good measure. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. In fact, Jennifer and Josh debuted on our network last night, and if you didn't catch it, it was a wonderful show. They are a lot of fun. Awful lot of fun. Jennifer is a real Southern belle. She is in, I think, in Memphis. And Josh is a transplant. He is a Jewish guy from New Jersey, now lives in Arizona. So, you know, we have a Southern and almost a bi-coastal perspective on that program. And the two of them are so much fun to listen to, and they are very experts, and they've got a guy they call the secret agent who, you know, apparently either does or used to work for the government in some capacity. Nobody knows what his name is. Nobody knows his name. The guy is so secret and so obscure, probably his mother doesn't know who he is. But he has a lot of insight, and he shared quite a bit of it last night. So make sure that you listen to Josh and Jennifer, the Grit and Grace show. We actually debuted two new programs on the network last night. 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. We have a new program on Tuesday nights called A Just Cause. And this is Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart. They are in Colorado. And they have essentially a paralegal firm. It's an exoneration law firm. If you know, there are, sadly, there are people that have been wrongfully convicted in this country for crimes that they did not commit. We have seen quite a few people literally be let off of death row when DNA evidence has cleared them. It kind of makes one wonder whether or not there were other people who went before them that were wrongfully executed. That is a terrible, terrible thing. It's shameful. And Sam and Cliff are working on getting six people out of federal prison right now. Based on the facts of the case with which I'm familiar, they don't belong to be in prison. They never should have been. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When I come back, we're going to be checking up on this day in Cynthia history, and we will also be joined by Victoria Bingham, so you stay right where you are.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Hey, sweetie. What's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay. What?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I don't believe it. My savings are gone.
Okay, think. Where'd you have them last?
I was home, then I spent them on that vacation and this tiny suit of armor. Now they're gone.
Weird. Weird? Not really. Not saving now means no money later. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas on ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org. Oh, I broke his little gauntlet.
Oh, no.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Com. And, of course, the Ashokan farewell by Jay Unger means it is time to look at, on this day, 150 years ago, and this info, of course, is from the Civil War Day by Day by E.B. Long and Barbara Long. October 9th was a Friday in 1863. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia was on the move. Whatever you think about the greatest armies of all time. After crossing the Rapidan River, the Confederate troops moved west and northward once more, attempting to turn General George Gordon Meade's right flank and head towards Washington. The Rapidan River in eastern Virginia. Meade's army had suspected a major move for several days, and now it was underway. Lee was trying both to take advantage of the federal reduction in force caused by sending troops west and to prevent any more such movement. However, the Army of the Potomac, under Meade, still greatly outnumbered the Confederates. Action in Virginia included a skirmish near James City and a five-day federal expedition to Chesaneau Creek. down in the Teche country of Louisiana, troops fought at Vermilion Bayou in Missouri. Shelby's Raiders skirmished near Cole Camp. The Civil War was, you know, somebody once described it as a black hole into which historians disappear and they are never heard from again. I can understand that. Speaking of Virginia, let me welcome Victoria Bingham. How are you doing tonight, hon? And how are things there in Virginia, the sacred soil of the Old Dominion, as they say?
Things are quiet on this western front, Duke. All is well with the world for now. I would like to say I think it's going to stay that way, but I don't. But we'll get that. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm just live in Virginia, right here in the Columbia. I'm thinking that there are no police, no firemen, no hospitals. Everything in the entire world is closed, no telephones, no TV, because the government has shut down. Is that right? No.
Yeah. They have, and we're going to talk about that. Can you hear me okay? Because I got a little static on this side.
Well, you know, a lot of people accuse me of giving them static. But I do hear you fine. So,
oh, okay,
tell
that's
me what
good.
Your outlook is on this.
Well, I was going to start out by saying, Duke, that I'm glad you have a radio show and not a TV show, because tonight it would be hair from hell. I was resting until I took this call, and I'm really glad that this is all vocal and we're not on Skype. But that's okay. And you know what? That actually I saw a funny cartoon today that I think you can appreciate. Did you see that one? I forget which magazine it was in, but it was Night. They were advertising a new movie out called Night of the Living Debt Ceiling.
Ha, ha, ha. Haven't seen that one.
I thought that was good, actually. Night of the Living Debt Ceiling, yes, anyway. But, well, things are peaceful in Virginia now, but I don't think they're going to stay that way, and that's why I was willing to come on the air tonight to talk to you for a few minutes about what I see in our future, in our very near future, and that's what I'm hoping we can have a conversation about for a few minutes. Because what I'd like to do with your radio audience is not just tell them what I see coming, but how to prepare. You know. I've been watching everything going on. I mean, we all have. Who could miss what's been going on? I mean, look at the last couple of years. It's been a real roller coaster ride. You know, we've been really protected and kind of in the Washington, D.C. area. Anyway, down here in Northern Virginia, we watch everything on around the nation with a kind of distant, with an aloofness we've been afforded by the simple fact that we have decent weather here. We don't really have much of an economic crisis because of all the government money. But a lot of us hail from other places, and we've watched with interest. You know, some of us bled for the people up in New York and Staten Island when Hurricane Sandy hit them. You know, and this year we've watched while they've had some flooding in Colorado that was called, literally, it was called biblical flooding. I mean, just flooding of epic proportions. You remember that?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, a couple
of
weeks ago.
That was just in
terrible.
August. Yes, in August. As a matter of fact, six dams allegedly burst. That stuff was unprecedented, and then that took us right into unprecedented fires. Remember that? More than 235,000 acres burning in Yosemite, of all places. It was called one of the seven largest fires in California history. 235,000 acres, 4,300 firefighters fighting that fire. You want to talk about biblical statistics. In fact, one person, one journalist, called that potentially a sign of things to come. Is anybody sitting up and taking notice that, you know, this is just not the 1970s anymore? But you know what's bothering me, Duke? You know, I'll tell you one. This is why I came on the radio tonight. I get the feeling, let's see how many people in your listening audience have the same feeling, that we're being primed to expect disasters. I was driving to work a couple of weeks ago. This is back in early September. And, you know, I was thinking about other things, but, you know, all these disasters, the Yosemite fire was on my mind because it just so happened I turned on my radio and the guy on the radio happened to mention the fire. And I was thinking about it, and I said, you know, I just kind of asked heaven, what am I supposed to think about this, and what am I supposed to do about this? And then this bus pulls next to me, and this bus's back banner, you know, they have those posters on the back or billboards. It was a big white billboard that said, it was just a question, what is your role in the next disaster? I'd never seen that before. Have you ever seen that bus or that bus sign?
No, we don't have a lot of public transportation around here in coastal Delaware.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I wonder how many people who are listening have seen things like that, you know, where you all of a sudden we're starting to see these posters around that say something about disaster this or that. You know, we have Janet Napolitano and others telling us, if you see something, say something, and it's eerie. I want to tell you something about me. Back many years ago when they first made airbags mandatory, pissed the hell out of me when you couldn't get a car without an airbag because, first of all, they were harmful. You know, seatbelts worked real well as far as I was concerned, and I didn't like the fact that these new airbags, they were killing kids. You know, there were some really nasty stories I won't even repeat. But Americans just took it in stride. You know, what pissed me off, Duke, was that you couldn't decide whether or not you wanted an airbag in your car. You had to have it. And then, you know, scroll many months later and you get all of a sudden, what was it, 2008, when the TSA came into the airports and started manhandling people and, you know, molesting them, even kids. I remember this video of this three-year-old screaming at the guy, take your hands off me. And I thought to myself, he's the only one in the whole airport that has any sense. And, again, I expected Americans to freak out and just protest, and it didn't happen. People just took it in stride. And here we have these signs, what's your role in the next disaster? I have a question for you. Do you not feel like we're being prepped to expect disasters?
What I feel is that the leftist government in D.C. is trying to create a set of conditions that they can use to justify an unconstitutional, a series of further unconstitutional acts in this country, because the left is trying to do here what the left has always tried to do, which is to basically tell everybody else what to do. When to do it.
Yes. Yeah, that's been the history of the left. Yes, whether it's been fascism, communism, any ism along the way, has been all about control. It's in fact, I don't know if you ever read that wonderful book. Is it Gary Allen? What's his name? Who wrote None Dare Call It Conspiracy? Greg Allen. I'll come up with that name in a second. But he has a wonderful quote about just that. You know, he just came right out and said that communism never really was about taking care of people and making sure everybody got a fair shake. It was always an elitist thing. And I think the last time I was on your show, I told you that Dmitry Volkogonov, the first writer of the authorized biography of Lenin, came out from the archives and said this guy just thought everybody, the proletariat, were idiots. And it's all about elitism. It's about a small covey of elite, wealthy people telling the rest of us what to do. But let me get to this. If it weren't for the fact that FEMA right now is preparing furiously for something in Region 3, if it weren't for the fact that we keep seeing one disaster after another in quicker and quicker succession, a little bit reminding me of birth spasms, which get closer and closer together as the big thing's coming, now take it into this, put it through this prism. Are you aware that with all the presidents we've ever had, they have this privilege called writing an executive order? And, you know, from the very first president, George Washington, till all the way up until, in fact, I would say FDR, most presidents only ever wrote between 3 and 5 executive orders. FDR finally broke the ice and wrote 11 in 12 years. Clinton, though, beat him, writing 15 in only 8 years, and then along came George W. Bush. He wrote 62 executive orders in just 8 years. Okay, now, do you have any idea how many executive orders Barack Obama has written in just 3.5 years? You want to take a guess?
Several hundred, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 923 executive orders.
Yeah.
And just here's
they're,
just they're
a
sample.
They're all unconstitutional. They're unconstitutional, you know. The
oh,
president
we wish
doesn't
cared.
Have the authority to simply give orders to people.
You know, it really wouldn't have been possible in the Eisenhower administration. It wouldn't have been possible under Kennedy or, God knows, maybe even Reagan. But all of a sudden, Americans are just sitting around letting – it's the – what is it? The frog in the warm water syndrome where they keep turning
yeah,
up the heat and nobody's noticing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Here's the sampling. Executive Order 10990 gives the government authority to take over transportation, all the highways, the seaways, every railroads. 10995 gives government the authority to take over all communications. You know, anybody who's ever been in the military knows that the number one way to be in control is to be in control of communications, the phone, the internet.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, with the revolution coming, they do take over the radio station, right?
Say that again, because you broke up for my end.
When the revolution comes, the first thing that they do is they take over the radio station, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And he's got himself the first ever executive order authorizing him to do just that. But it gets better. 997, he takes over electric power, gas, and fuel. 998, these are written in sequence, quick order. You can see that by their numbers. It's kind of like the ticket you get when you go into the bank, and there's a line. Right after 997 comes 10998, where the government has the authority to, are you ready for this, take over all food resources in the United States and farms. 11000, they have the authority to mobilize civilians for brigades. There's a whole lot more, obviously, if you got 923, but here's the one that I thought I'd highlight while I still have a minute here. 11921 gives FEMA the authority to develop plans to control all production, distribution, wages, salaries, credit, and flow of money in, quote, any undefined national emergency. So now that brings me to my point. They've been waiting for... I mean, the rest of this stuff has been, like, preparatory. You know, it's just preparing the American people, getting our psyche ready for the big one, because we've come to expect this. We've had Hurricane Sandy. We've had the dams. We've had the fires. And now they want to do something really big to institute martial law and to get some of these executive orders to kick in. But they have to have people feel like, oh, my God, we need the government now. Look how big this emergency is. And I really do believe, and I'm here to tell you, that I believe that this Friday, October 11th, is D-Day for a big one in Region 3. And it's not just because of all the FEMA activity. And anybody can go on the internet and see how much they're preparing for potential disasters in Virginia, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Delaware, and West Virginia. But here's the kicker. Today, while I was taking a shower, it came to me like a ton of bricks from heaven. The whole government shutdown is a hoax. It was part of a plan to help them, that is the lawmakers, get out of town this weekend so they don't have to be around for whatever's coming down.
you might be right. Now, I'm going to take a quick break here, and I'd like you to stand by, okay? And we're going to pick this up on the other side of this. Brad Bierman is waiting in the wings here, so we are going to just a really quick break. Victoria is talking about some really terrible things that could happen in our country. As far as individuals are concerned, one of the worst things that can happen to you right now is identity theft. And if it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. So don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There really is nothing that even comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. We'll be right back with Victoria Bingham and Brad Bierman, so you stay right where you are.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backpack.
When I grow up, I want to be a bike that races around the
when
country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest
trail. When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
Oh, I want to be
a...
I want
to be
I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
My dad came to live with us last month, and, you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change? You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Thank you, Greg Durant. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176 is the number. I'm joined once again by Victoria Bingham. Vic, what can the average person out there, John Key public, as it were, do to prepare for what might be an impending government-driven disaster?
Well, you know, I don't have the time here to go into the things that I've seen and the dots that I'm learning to connect, but it seems to be suggesting that this Friday, the 11th of October, something may come down in the D.C., Virginia area, and my guess is that it has something to do with chemicals, chemical weapons, something being either exploded or dropped from the sky. And the only thing a person can do, I could be wrong, but I'll tell you what I'm doing with my house. As of Thursday night, I'm turning off the HVAC. I'm wrapping the filter in plastic. I'm closing all the doors and windows. I have enough food and water to stay in my house at least a week if I want to without turning anything off. I mean, if it were going to be a chemical attack and you can't get out of town, that would be the thing to do. Again, I don't know 100% what's coming down. I do know something's planned for this area. Then the most important preparation is always spiritual. A person ought to have a good relationship with God, and what they can do after that is just give him their house by pleading the blood of Christ over it. Anoint the house with oil, especially the doorposts, the things that the children of Israel did. Protected them from the angel of death 4,000 years ago. It still works today. I've anointed my house with oil that I blessed in the name of Jesus Christ. And again, I know it seems foolish in the eyes of the world, but the Apostle Paul told us that the things that Christians are called to do, even the wisdom that God uses for us, appears foolish to the world. The wisdom of preaching, for example. In any case, those are my suggestions. If you can't leave the area for a week, then just hunker down and make sure you keep the doors and windows closed and turn off the air conditioning and the heat. Don't pull in outside air. Again, it's a guess, but that's what I'm doing because I have enough evidence to – these people are dead serious, Duke. They're dead serious. They're deadly and they're dead serious.
I know they are. I know they are. I know they are.
I wish this was a joke, and I wish we were going to wake up tomorrow and Reagan was back in office and everything was fine with the world, but it ain't going to happen.
Oh, boy. Oh, you're not kidding. Listen, thanks for being with us tonight. I'm going to be again at some point soon. Just shut everything down.
And, you know, I'll email you some other suggestions that you can routinely give to people if they do call in and ask for them.
Thank you, Victoria. Have a wonderful night, honey.
Great talking to you as always, and I expect to hear from you again soon. Take good care. God bless you, Duke.
And you as well. Thank you so much, my friend. All righty. We are about 18 minutes now before the top of the hour, and it is October, and that means that things are underway. And welcome, Brad Bierman. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Thank you, Duke, and yourself.
Not bad. The game between Pittsburgh and St. Louis started a short while ago. Pittsburgh is leading St. Louis two games to one or
this series is two games to two, and currently in game five, it's 2-0 to St. Louis in the bottom of the fifth.
Oh, good. All right. Well, I'm kind of a Cardinals fan. Now, what is happening in the National League?
Well, this is the National League, the other series. The Dodgers have already clinched to move on as they defeated Atlanta. So the winner tonight will fly to Los Angeles, and game one of the National League Championship Series will be Friday.
It looks like Boston has pretty much beaten up on Tampa Bay.
That series is over, yes.
Okay, so Boston has won the American League division, correct?
Correct, division series. And Boston awaits the winner of Oakland and Detroit. They play game five tomorrow night in Oakland.
So this is a nail-biter. Several of these series are going the full five games.
That's correct. All but the Red Sox-Tampa series and the Dodgers-Braves series, the other two are going the full five games.
Now, we don't get into the actual World Series until about a week before Halloween, Wednesday the 23rd. That's when the series will start that night. However, we do have the actual pennant games are beginning this Friday and concluding about a week later. What do you think the outcome is going to be? Who do you think is going to be playing in the World Series?
Well, after the games series so far, I would have to say the Dodgers and the Red Sox would be the favorites. They've just played really well in this first series, and what's being talked about, Duke, is the fact that these two teams, if indeed they do play in the World Series, the Dodgers and the Red Sox, pulled off a major trade a year ago in the 2012 series that at the time was raising a lot of eyebrows around baseball because the Red Sox basically shipped $100 million worth of salary to the Dodgers in that one transaction of several players, and now those players have gone on to help the Dodgers win and look very strong in the National League, while the Red Sox just had a great season reinventing themselves with a new manager, and their season's been all about growing the beards. All the team, many players on the team have grown out their beards. And, you know, when you think about the history of baseball, Duke, there's not a lot of teams, if you don't, you know, going before you go back to the 20s or so, that had players with beards.
Yeah, in the 20th century, yeah, it was not the style.
So quite unusual that in the modern era now the Red Sox have bonded and had such a great season where all the players went out and, you know, at least the majority of them, and grew out their beards.
Yeah, there's no more clean-cut looking players like Joe DiMaggio, Babe Ruth. I mean, back then there was no beards, no mustaches, short hair, combed neatly. Those days are gone, at least for now, which is a serious bummer. Now, is it not true that every year, almost every year, there are some minor modifications to the major league rules?
I would say that's probably pretty accurate on a year-in and year-out basis, yes. And one of the big rules next year that's going to kind of be expanded upon is the use of instant replay cameras in baseball.
There have been quite a few incidents in baseball where umpires have called things incorrectly. They're only human. But what will the procedure be?
The procedure will be that a manager of the opposing team that is disputing the call will actually be able to signal. I've heard talk that he'll actually be able to throw something out on the field similar to what a football coach does today when they're challenging a call in that sport. The manager will certainly have some sort of procedure to notify the umpires that he's disputing the call. They will then go in. I don't know if it's going to remain three of the four umpires as it is today for when they check for a home run, but the umpires will retreat under the stand, look at the video, make a decision, and come back out.
Well, it's probably going to resolve a lot of things. I would hope that it will. You know, my dad told me when I was a kid that there is a rule in the major leagues that in order to be an umpire, you have to have been declared legally blind. And, you know, at one point I checked the rule book and I didn't see that in there. It must have been a misprint because my dad was right about everything. You know, it's funny, the older I get, the more correct my dad gets. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but
I hear you.
Are you going to any of these games? Are you going to go to any of the Boston games?
No, I won't be going to any of the games this fall, no.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Are you good? If the World Series, I mean, it's going to be a bi-coastal World Series, the old Brooklyn Dodgers, my dad's favorite team, against the Red Sox, it should be extremely interesting, but it's taking place very late in the year. If they add any more teams to the major leagues, it's conceivable that the World Series one day might be played entirely in the month of November, and the season could start in March.
Well, there have been World Series games in November, so there has been the precedent. But it's all about, as we've talked about before on your program, the TV money. There's just more of it to grab, and they just create these extra round of playoff games. This year, of course, or the second year with that wild card game, that one game that teams play, just to create that extra round.
Well, it's, you know, baseball is more than just a sport. As you're aware, I have not been a dedicated baseball fan, but it is, you know, I respect it for the fact that it is a thread in our national fabric. I mean, this is our sport. This is what we play. Now, what is the NFL looking like right now? I understand the Ravens are not having a very good year. They got off to kind of a bad start, huh?
Yes, they did, but I think when all is said and done, they'll be competing for a playoff spot again. I mean, after all, they are the defending Super Bowl champions. So I think when you talk about the NFL, and really it's a much deeper subject than, of course, on your time on the program, but the League of Denial documentary that aired on PBS Frontline last night, which was examining the whole issue of concussions in the NFL, is certainly the buzz for the last 24, 48 hours.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting season. And, Brad, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I appreciate your time and expertise and your predictions. I suspect you're going to be right. You and I, at different points in our career, both worked for a guy named Don Kelly. And as I'm sure you're aware, Don Kelly is a huge baseball fan, major Red Sox fan, and he must be extremely happy right now.
I'm sure he is, as all of Red Sox Nation. Thank you as well, Duke. Enjoyed it as always.
Thank you, my buddy. I'll be talking to you soon. Give Cindy my best.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. All righty. Brad is a world-class expert on professional sports, no question about it. Now I want to bring in a world-class expert on firearms and the Second Amendment, my buddy Max Roberts. Max, how you doing tonight, pal?
Good night, Duke. Good to be in touch with you. Good getting ready to talk about another interesting show for tomorrow night, which we should be pretty interesting. We will have our usual mix of politics. We will point out a little bit of hypocrisy going on in Washington. It's kind of a slow week this week, but there is some interesting tidbits. And we have three rather interesting guns to talk about. We will continue our series on the 46th Federalist Paper. And we will also have a very special talking about women in guns, which I think should be pretty good. We will talk about women in guns, and also we will talk about a few great concealed carry weapons for the ladies. And we will also introduce a new feature where we are going to start talking about guns that had an effect on history. And I think we got a real interesting piece, which I think should get our viewers excited. It's a classic, all from the 30s and World War II.
It would be difficult for me to imagine any one thing in history that has had as much of an impact on history as firearms have. And
no,
within
have
that, there's, you know, quite a few very interesting ones. And interesting. A moment ago, you said that there is hypocrisy in Washington. I'm shocked.
Oh, there's
that there would be hypocrisy. I can't believe it.
It's growing by the week. It's growing by the week, Duke. It grows by the week. And we here, since we are a conservative nations of radio, where America always wins, we want to keep our listeners informed as to what is going on. Don't hear it or see it. We're going to make sure that they get those stories because it's important. It's important that they know every week what's going on and to see what these politicians are doing. Remember, the politicians are supposed to serve the people, not the other way around.
You got that right. About that. Anyway, I am really looking forward to hearing you tomorrow night on the Second Amendment Forum on conservativenationmedia.com, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central. Thanks for calling in tonight, pal, and I can't wait to speak with you tomorrow night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All righty, Max Roberts and his show, the Second Amendment Forum, will be on the air tomorrow night right here, conservativenationmedia.com. 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central Time. And we've got about 5.5 minutes to go this edition of Radio Free America. 305-7176 is the number. I don't know about you, but the level of outrage that I am detecting over the fact that the federal government denied World War II veterans the right to go to the World War II memorial with fences that had to be taken down by Michelle Bachmann and Louis Gohmert, I mean, it is utterly and completely outrageous. And then a few days later, they allowed a rally of illegal immigrants on our National Mall. These are people that have broken our law and have come into our country illegally and wrongfully. They have no business being here. They shouldn't be here. What they should have done, if they had been smart and if they had wanted to do the right thing, they would have sent either the D.C. National Guard or every park policeman that they could find, or U.S. Marshals or something, and rounded them all up, hooked them all up, and deported every one of them right then and right there. And that way we would not have to be troubled by them and their whinings and their absurd pleading that for some reason they're entitled to be in this country as people who were born here, whose parents were born here, whose grandparents were born here. Look, my family has been having nothing but trouble with immigrants ever since we arrived here, and I think it's about time that it stopped. 718-305-7176, 3.5 minutes to go. You know, that is just one of the outrages. If we were going to be an outrage of the week with this administration, it is really more like the outrage of the day or the outrage of the hour. There were a couple of New York Times, one in the Times and one in the Post the other day, that both said that this administration is the most secretive. It is the administration that has a worse relationship with the press than any other administration. Even Nixon had a better and a more open relationship with the press than the Obama administration does. And, you know, these guys are those guys in Washington. They come from the, to put it as politely and mildly as possible, the rough and tumble world of Chicago politics. That's not really a good way to be running it. You know, in Chicago, they literally use muscle in politics. That is literally what they do. And you know, there's bribery. There are goons out there that have been suppressing the vote for a very long time. As they say in Chicago, vote early and vote often. And, you know, stuffing ballots, this is just the Chicago style. Not the Chicago manual of style. That's different. This is just the way things are done in Chicago. And these guys in D.C., they come from that tradition. Not to never, ever. I mean, $17 trillion in debt? $17 trillion? And there were so-called laid-off government employees that were whining and complaining about it on TV the other day. And I keep thinking to myself, hey, I just got my federal government job about 2 years ago, and now I'm laid off already. I can't be on my furlough. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, don't go to work for an organization that is $17 trillion in the red. What do you expect to happen? I mean, seriously. Anyway, about a minute ago, there's that news lady saying 90 seconds. It's like a movie 8, you know? We have 4 minutes to evacuate. Next week, in keeping with my longstanding tradition of giving the left the opportunity to express themselves, I don't have any problem. You know, it doesn't have to be all conservatives all the time. I'll let the leftists on. I'm going to have Ed Troy from Colorado. Ed describes himself as the liberal gladiator, and he'll be joining me next week to give him the opportunity to explain why he thinks Obamacare is a great thing. I swear there are people that actually think that. It's unbelievable. Thanks a lot for being along this evening. You have yourself a wonderful night, and I look forward to speaking to you again next Wednesday. Have a good one.